Hi, I'm Femi Okay. Today on the stream, we unpack the controversial practice of carbon offsetting. It's where a company or a country tries to counteract the greenhouse gases that they're emitting by funding the reduction of emissions elsewhere. It sounds pretty simple, right? But it's a little bit more complicated than that. So many issues to talk about. Let's start at the Stockholm Environment Institute.
So the first thing to keep in mind about carbon offsetting is that the world cannot offset its way out of climate change. Companies, organizations, and countries need to focus first on reducing their own emissions. Second, a lot of the challenges with carbon offsetting arise because so many buyers are focused on achieving carbon neutrality or net zero emissions for themselves. And I think we need to move away from this idea. Think less about achieving your own net zero and more about what you can contribute to global net zero.
That's what Derek has to say. Let's see what our guests have to say. Hello, Amer. Hello, Yev. Hello, Shuchi. So good to have you. Amer, please introduce yourself to our international audience.
My name is Omer Irfan. I am a science reporter at Vox, and I focus on climate change.
Good to have you. Yev, say hello to our international audience. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Hello, everyone. My name is Yeb Sanyo. I'm currently the executive director of Greenpeace in Southeast Asia. And I like to call myself a recovering climate negotiator as I was a chief negotiator for the Philippines for many years.
Thank you, Yeb. I hope this conversation isn't too triggering for you. Hello there, Shuchi. Nice to have you. Please do introduce yourself to our stream audience.
Hi, everyone. I'm Shuchi Taladi, and I am the chief of staff of the Office of Fossil Energy and Carbon Management at the United States Department of Energy.
All right, guests, I'm going to put you to work straight away. There are certain phrases that have already popped up into this conversation. We hear them all of the time when we use the climate crisis as a point of discussion. I'm going to get you to unpack them in two sentences or less. Let me start with net zero. Amer, you take net zero.
Sure. Net zero is the idea that you can achieve greenhouse gas emissions that are zeroed out so that when you produce something, you compensate for it in another place or in another way.
Carbon neutrality. Shuchi.
Sure. So carbon neutrality is that state of being at zero. And so as Amir said, when you try and compensate for something, when you reach that state, it's called carbon neutral.
Thank you so much. And carbon offsets. Yeah, you take that one.
Yes, carbon offsetting is about, you know, paying for someone else to reduce or remove the carbon that you produce while you continue, in fact, pumping it into the atmosphere. I liken it to someone going to church on Sunday so that he can go being sinful from Monday to Saturday.
All right. So Yev has got our conversation truly started. There is the debate. If you're on YouTube right now, the comment section is open for you. We are asking about carbon offsetting. The UN climate conference is happening right now. How can carbon offsetting help our global climate emergency? Can it help our global climate emergency? Your thoughts right here, and hopefully I'll be able to put them onto the show. All right, so I'm trying to think of how carbon offsetting might work. And for that, I went to a company called Cool Effect. They've got different areas that you can look at. We've got air travel, driving, accommodations, cruising, and they tell you how much carbon you're using up. So let's take a flight. Let's take a flight that's going to take us 7 to 9 hours. We're using 1.32 tons of carbon. And that, if I wanted to pay for that, that is $15.50. I have offset the carbon. Or have I, Omer?
It really depends on the quality of the offset that you're using. And that's the main contention here. Not all offsets are created equal. And it really depends on the level of accounting and the level of accountability that you have for that offset. And so generally, I tend to be very skeptical when someone promises that degree of precision. So the saying 1.32 tons can be compensated by spending $15.30 or something like that. So there are mechanisms that are a little bit more controversial, things like ecosystem restoration, things like restoring forests. The idea is if you replant an area of degraded forest as it grows over time, it takes in carbon dioxide and stores it, such that your total balance is zero. And that's really controversial for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that it's really hard to keep track of. And many of the offsets that we've used so far have failed to produce results when they're actually measured.
So I'm looking at the whole business of carbon offsetting right now. And I could pay money. I could pay money right here on the show to somebody to offset my the way that I'm moving around the world and maybe using up carbon or producing carbon, I should really say. Is there an ethical issue with that? Su Qi, you start.
Sure. I think it really depends, again, on the quality and location of where these offsets are happening. I think, you know, we really need to pay attention to the global south and understanding kind of where some of these projects lie. I think when we think about a project happening somewhere in the global south, understanding that we're transferring the liability of those emissions elsewhere is deeply problematic. And so we really need to evaluate, you know, what we're taking into account and how these projects are being managed and how they're affecting communities where they're located.
I want to play for to you, Yeb, Jody Manning. She is the Vice President and Director of Partnerships, Cool Effect. I was just on her website just a moment ago. Would you have a listen to Jody and then respond to her premise? Here she is.
We do believe that reducing emissions is absolutely the most important piece of decarbonization. However, every business and individual, regardless of how much they reduce, will still have emissions that are unabatable. And that's where high-quality carbon offsets can come in as a useful tool to help people reduce their emissions and compensate in a way that's actually benefiting those in local communities. A high-quality carbon offset, if presented with price transparency and is fully monitored and scientifically verified, can be transformative to a local community.
Yes, I think I heard a lot of things I wanted to hear in terms of how carbon offsets might work, and that includes quality of those offsets. It includes, of course, the verifiability of those offsets. But I still think that it's a tricky business, because what we're dealing with here is a climate emergency, and there's just basically no time, not enough time for us to indulge in offsets when the real things that need to be done is absolute emissions reductions. Offsetting in this particular case, even if they're high quality offsets, it's a big distraction from what needs to be done. And with the escalating impacts of climate change, there's just simply no time for that.
Amir, go ahead.
Well, to pick up on that point, I mean, to the definition we gave earlier about net zero, you know, absolute reductions are the contrasting point to that. So net zero is where you emit and then compensate for it, whereas the absolute reduction is where you stop emitting in the first place. And as Yeb said, that, you know, that is the most beneficial thing to do. It has a lot of co-benefits. So if you prevent CO2 from going into the air, you also reduce local pollution. But also, because climate change is a problem not just in space, but in time, that means that, you know, the actions that we take now will resonate for decades, for centuries. And so that's why you need to have upfront emissions reductions. And that's the problem with offsets, is that it can delay those upfront emissions reductions.
Shishi, I'm just wondering, does the science actually work? Is the science there? Are we still debating the science?
I think we're having trouble really understanding the accounting. And so, you know, from the perspective of the U.S. government and from the Department of Energy, you know, we think that anything that can be decarbonized now should be. Any non-fossil option should be chosen where that's feasible. I think the tricky part here is when we think about these hardest to decarbonize sectors like aviation or shipping, and how we really think about what net zero means in the context of those sectors that might not be able to hit zero emissions at that time. And I think that's when carbon dioxide removal comes into play, to really address those hardest to decarbonize pieces. But I really, you know, agree with Yeb's point that for everything we can decarbonize now, we should. And I don't think that means for a specific business. I think that means economy-wide. And we have to be really careful about not looking at individual companies and allowing them to, you know, not decarbonize what they can because offsets are available.
Guess, help me understand what we could decarbonize now if we had the will to do it. Su Qi, you start. What could we do now, immediately?
I mean, if you look at a natural gas power plant, you know, we can put carbon capture and storage on that plant. That power plant should not be buying offsets elsewhere to, you know, quote unquote, counterbalance those emissions. Now, I think, you know, the contrast there is, if when you look at something like aviation, you know, you can think about sustainable aviation fuels, but those might not be, you know, deployable by 2050, you know, throughout the whole sector. Mm. And that's something that we will need to offset to get to net zero by 2050.
What can we decarbonize now, absolutely now, today, this month, this year? Yeah.
Well, the biggest sector that needs decarbonization is the electricity production sector. And that happens also to be the biggest culprit for climate change. So we need a massive, rapid transition towards decarbonizing all electricity power plants. And the transport sector definitely comes in second. So the transition is happening. It's exciting, and we need to embrace it, whether it's new technology that allows us to move people and goods in a more environment-friendly way, in a climate-friendly way, or mass transport systems, or making cities more livable and lovable. We have to do that. That is an imperative with the climate crisis.
Emma, you've reported so much on this issue. I'm just looking here at a headline from The Guardian. New Zealand planned to halve greenhouse gas emissions, criticised as an accounting trick. I'm still sort of on the fence whether carbon offsetting is a scam or not. Like paying someone else to do your homework. So you haven't done your homework, have you?
Right. And that is the contention, especially when we're talking about climate change as a global issue. We know that, for instance, some countries have contributed more to the problem than others, but the countries that stand to suffer the most from rising average temperatures are the ones that contributed least to the problem. So countries like that are islands or on coastal areas that are vulnerable to sea level rise, they didn't really cause this problem, but they stand to suffer from it. And seeing wealthier countries like New Zealand, like the United States, effectively buy their way out of the problem, you know, fundamentally propagates that injustice. And so that's why a lot of advocates and activists are very critical of this, that these wealthy countries have the resources and should be targeting absolute reductions first before they start doing these offsets. And that's really where they need to prioritize, and that's where they should be scrutinized first.
I'm just looking at some of the conversation on YouTube. I'm going to share it with you. Yeah, I'll start with you. Sammy says, this is an elitist scheme. The poor will pick up the burden and the wealthy corporations and countries will get away with anything. Yeah, thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. This is not just a science issue. It's way beyond an issue of accounting and technical feasibility. It is at its core a justice issue. Why? As Amir correctly pointed out, the climate problem is a problem that is here because of the emissions mainly from industrialized nations. And now they're asking poorer nations to host all of these offsetting projects. And these injustices are, in fact, magnified and deepened by a central flaw. Offsetting allows the biggest polluters on Earth to delay and distract from reducing their own emissions. And while we celebrate, you know, the most significant feature of the Paris Agreement, when countries agreed that we would want to keep global temperature rise below 1.5 degrees as a collective shared mission, but what we're seeing now is thousands of companies announced all of these net zero plans, but they're failing to grasp the enormity of the transformation that is required. And this is not just about emissions per se, but, you know, the climate crisis is offering us an opportunity to transform the economic order, and we're failing to see that.
A couple of thoughts for you, Shuchi, from YouTube. Obi-Wan says, offset, scam. Are there scams around right now?
I mean, there are. And I think, you know, there are frameworks that don't have verifiable removals, and we don't have a framework in which there's public oversight. And I think when it comes to defining what a high-quality offset is and what we really want that to look like, that's the role of the government. We are meant to create regulations and oversight over what we think will actually provide benefit, because that's our purpose. It's to provide benefit and to address the climate crisis. And so when we think about creating a system, you know, that takes a really robust federal government approach to create, you know, accountability, to create monitoring, reporting, and verification, to verify permanence. And you really can't do that without robust government infrastructure.
Amir, it seems to me like this is actually just quite chaotic. It's an idea that technically works, theoretically works, but doesn't in practice. No regulation, no oversight, it's voluntary, can do what you like. don't necessarily have to cut your emissions impacting the global south. This is a whole long list of things and reasons why people should not trust carbon offsetting. Weigh in.
Well, on all those things are true, but at the same time, in some respects, they may be a necessary evil. Now, we can hypothesize or come up with a scenario where, okay, say we have a country that does make every absolute reduction that they possibly can up front, but say they still need to travel, they still need to have aviation as a sector. Then, as a last resort, a high-quality carbon offset might make sense, in which case you could use that. You know, the question is, what is the alternative? I think it would be better to take money from somebody that's willing to spend it and use it to do something that's beneficial to the climate rather than them sitting on that money and doing nothing. But that only makes sense in that specific circumstance when you've exhausted all other options. So possibly as a last resort, that may make sense. Now, we have seen, you know, that as Sochi was mentioning, you know, we need a lot of accountability and oversight. And it's really been the Wild West out here as far as offsets. You know, the world has tried to use offsets before in previous climate agreements, namely under the Kyoto Protocol. And, you know, the credits that were created under that mechanism were really deeply flawed. And there are still countries that are still trying to use and trade those credits now. And that's also been something of a disruption that's been a distraction in these climate negotiations. And so, yeah, we really do need a lot of international coordination, not just government coordination at the federal level, but across borders to make sure everybody's playing by the same rules. Nobody's trying to hide their hand or trying any kind of accounting gimmicks. And that, of course, is really hard to do.
Let me ask. Yes. Shichi, you go first.
I think it's also how we, you know, define offset. And so when you look at the type of project, we want to make sure that risk is taken into account here. And so, you know, as Omer mentioned, forestry is a really big part of how offsets are currently in the market. But if we look at different types of carbon removal that, you know, isn't available today but will be in the future, those are lower risk projects that lead to permanent removal. How could we make sure that, you know, offsets are done in a way that is just and is accountable?
I think that's
where the risk question comes into play. And I think that's where governments come into play. How are we defining through projects that have high risk and, you know, no verifiability for permanence? Or are we choosing projects that we know will lead to permanence that the government is helping deploy? And that, so we know we're doing it in a just and sustainable way. And that's the question.
I'm going to channel my inner nerd here because I'm wondering, how much is a carbon credit worth, Omer?
It really depends on the market that you're in. You know, there's a voluntary carbon market, you know, where people can choose to buy carbon credits and offsets for their activities, but they're also mandatory, or there are compliance markets as well. So basically, there are parts of the world like the European Union that actually have a cap and trade scheme in place where basically countries are on balance limited in their greenhouse gas emissions, but then they can trade with other countries if they can't hit their own cap. And in those places, then you see carbon credits fluctuating with market prices. It's almost like a stock. And so they can drop really low, become very cheap, or they can get really expensive. And the idea is, in those kinds of situations, carbon credits will get expensive over time and force people to make absolute reductions in emissions, that eventually there will be an upper limit to how much you can afford to simply offset your emissions in the ideal scenario. In practice, carbon credits, even in these kinds of compliance markets, have been so cheap that they've really been an excuse to continue polluting and not deliver the reductions that we've been hoping for.
Let me bring in a new voice to our conversation. This is Chiara Liguori. She's the Environment and Human Rights Policy Advisor at Amnesty International. This is what she told us a few hours earlier.
We must reach real zero emissions, not net zero. The house is on fire, and we cannot rely on carbon offsetting to continue burning fossil fuels. Fossil fuels are incompatible with human rights, as their continued burning will lead to devastating impacts of climate change for people around the world. In Glasgow, states should adopt clear plans to phase out fossil fuels and rules that allow for genuine emission reductions and guarantee human rights. Too often, carbon offsetting projects have resulted in human rights violations, for example, indigenous peoples being dispossessed of their lands or even killed in the process of peaceful opposing such projects. We must not allow this to continue.
So Chiara is in Glasgow at the UN Climate Conference right now. And let me just share with you a tweet from Yeb. If you're at COP26, beware of the carbon offsetting lies being peddled there. COP26 basics. Why refuse to collude with the polluters in the carbon offsetting lie? What are the lies, Yeb?
There's tons of lies. And one of the most important things is that it is being heralded as a magic wand. It is not a magic wand. It is definitely not going to solve the climate. And it is being oversold as the solution to climate change by saying that, you know, we need market forces to solve the climate crisis. Well, it's the market forces that has brought us into this crisis in the first place. And offsetting, I agree with Chiara, and I'm happy that she mentioned the entire at the core of this problem is how human rights are being violated. And one of those lies is that the Global South is going to benefit from all of these offsetting projects. Well, offsetting has a long and well-documented history of problems, not just in terms of how they deliver genuine benefit for the climate, but a long history of negative impacts for land rights, social justice, for marginalized communities, and also for biodiversity in many countries. And what is not understood well here is that if you talk about offsets, they're going to happen mostly in the Global South, as Shushi correctly pointed out earlier. We're really concerned that many of the historic problems that have happened with all of these offsetting projects and the broader risk of undermining the climate goals will be exacerbated by the growing corporate and political enthusiasm for all of these market initiatives. And that is a distraction from what needs to be done, as we keep saying. And at the heart of this, as Chiara emphasized, is the fossil fuel industry. And I'm aghast with the notion that the fossil fuel industry wants to offset their emissions. You know, if I even set aside my disbelief about offsets, and let's say it can work technically, I think forest projects, meaning all of this offset where we have to plant trees to offset the emissions from the fossil fuel industry, is just unacceptable for me. I would say that we should focus, for example, on solar power, on renewable energy, and those things are easier to account, and therefore we can avoid those lies.
Yeah, how is this different from climate financing? Why isn't carbon offsetting climate financing?
Well, climate financing is a broader term that may include, as a subset, financing that goes into carbon trading and also, therefore, carbon offsetting. Mm. Climate financing, by its strict definition under the UN Climate Convention, is financial resources, money that should be provided by rich countries or what is listed as Annex II countries of the Climate Convention to developing countries, poorer countries who are at the receiving end of the climate impacts, so that they can also leapfrog into a cleaner kind of development and also adapt to the impacts of climate change. That is an obligation under the UN Climate Convention, and the Paris Agreement has also made it very clear that developed countries need to mobilize as much as at least $100 billion per year by 2020 up to 2025. If we're talking about money here that needs to be used to generate that kind of transition and that kind of transformation towards cleaner development, and also allow countries to cope with the impacts of climate change. That is climate finance. When we talk about offsets, this is not real climate finance, because what we're talking about here is just basically money being thrown at the problem. It's not money being used to solve the problem.
We could talk more about this, but we are almost at the end of today's show. I want to thank Umair and Yeb and Shuji, and also you for your very incisive questions and thoughts about carbon offsetting. And is it genuinely a way to tackle our climate crisis? I think the answer is it depends. And if it's done well, you can follow our guests on Twitter. Have a look here on my laptop. This is Umair. This is Yeb, the recovering climate negotiator. And this is Suchi. Thanks for watching, everybody. I'll see you next time. Take care.